This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 357 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me from Melbourne once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Why do you always use the same intro? Are you that unimaginative that you just...
Yeah, pretty much.
I could introduce one and introduce you for once. I'll just spitball on here.
Okay.
We're up to episode something or other, and this is Bruce up in Sydney. Say something like that.
You could do that.
See? Should we start again?
No.
Think about it. That's what I'm saying. Think about it. Yeah, revolutionise the whole podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, satisfaction level could go up by, 0.03 of a percent or something. You know?
And for the last time for a month from Melbourne, Mr. Glyn Lavender.
There you go. So yeah, you've added mystery, you've added intrigue, drama, tension.
I'm liking
this new Bruce. B2, we're going to call you from now on.
Right.
Bruce Mark Poo. Fabulous. First I have to check on you.
Oh, okay.
Because you're important to me. So, David, how's the bike's broken down yet?
No.
But it was supposed to by today. My bet.
According to you, yes. But no, it's so far so good.
No funny noises?
Nope.
A little bit of loss of power?
Nope.
A little clank, clank?
Nope.
Fuel range, as in how much kilometres per tank again, gone down a bit?
No. No.
Gone up a bit. Nothing.
And Rakesh posted on Facebook today a story that as of next year, Triumph at Hinkley in England, which is the factory, is reopening the factory to public tours. He said,
well,
you're booking your flights.
Pop over there and have a few words.
Yeah.
I'd like to have a word with the manager, please.
So anyway, I said to him, hey, we're going to be over there in July, but I'm not going to have time to be doing things like that.
Yeah, but you might get a free T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a triumph.
Yes, it would. So how's your week been?
My week has been, same old. Family health crises.
Right.
My dad's kicking into his four and a half week in hospital now. And I reckon if we haven't met before February, it'd be a miracle.
Oh, really?
So, it's not looking good. Who knows?
Yeah,
fun and games. I've got a suggestion for you, Bruce.
Yeah.
It's probably a bit too late for you, really, but still, don't get old.
Right. I shall put that on my to-do list.
My five-year-old daughter today said to me, she goes, Daddy, I forgot what she said. She was something. She goes,
wasn't it, will I still be alive when the sun blows up or something?
No, Daddy, will I be dead when the sun blows up? And I said, yes. And she goes, phew.
Crisis averted.
You know, it's like, will I still be alive when I'm really old and not able to move around much? And unfortunately, possibly, yes. That's no fun at all. So my week's been what else? Planning for my trip away next week. Just, starting to slump gear into a big pile.
Right.
Which is about as technical as it's got.
Right.
I'm trying to pare down the stuff I'm taking.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm trying to take the least amount of gear.
Yeah, trying to work out what's the minimum I can get away with.
Yeah, so, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So what I've got is, I might read through it just because, it can take time. So I've got a Canon 5D Mark III,
yeah,
a 6D, and my iPhone 6S Plus. They're my three cameras.
Right.
Lenses, I've really cut down here. But I might be adding to it. I'm not sure. A 15-30.
Yep.
And a 70-200.
Yeah.
That's going to cover 90% of the stuff I'm going to do.
Yep.
Then 85 1.8 and 45mm 1.8.
Okay.
All made by the lovely Tamron people, of course.
Yeah. And you're comfortable with not having the whole 30-70 range covered?
Oh yeah, I never use it.
Fair enough.
Never ever use it. And
it's the boring lengths.
I've got the 45mm there if I was sort of stuck in the middle. You know, yeah, really need something smack in the middle. And talking to Malcolm this afternoon, maybe my 150 to 600.
Right.
Because there's just one shot in this one area where you want a fair whack of compression to make the image work its best.
Right.
And so the problem is, so you've got a couple of problems. Internal flights in Myanmar are, yeah, they're a bit weight restrictive.
Yep.
And so all of a sudden you're taking this extra really big heavy lens for effectively one or two shots. Yeah, you get to tote it around with you for 2 weeks or 20 days, which is, oh no. So I'm umming and ahhing about that. But then my 90% of my street stuff's going to be the 15 to 30 to 70 to 200. Bang.
All right.
That'll cover just, and so I always have two bodies out all the time. So if you look at it this way, in your backpack, you've gone from having two cameras and four lenses, because your two cameras are out all the time and two of your biggest lenses are out all the time. There's not a lot of weight in your backpack to walk around with all day, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the lenses. Then flashes, I'm taking two of my Godox flashes.
Right.
And one battery pack. And a bunch of Godox triggers, because there'll be Nikon users and there'll be Canon users, so yep, a couple of different triggers for them, three or four triggers. And I thought I'd even take a light modifier, and a light modifier. I'm taking an umbrella,
right? Okay,
just a little shoot through, just to keep it nice and simple.
Mm-hmm.
A little Velbon Ultra 555 travel tripod, which is nice. Four 128 gig cards.
Wee yoy yoy. Yep.
What do you think?
How long have you gone
too much? 20 days.
But you shoot JPEG.
Yeah? Your point is?
You won't even fill one of them.
I know. But what if one fails?
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah? So, redundancies.
Fair enough. And I suppose taking four memory cards is not exactly a huge weight impediment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or space. It's not really, taking up a lot of space. So speaking of taking up a bit of space, I'm taking my Lexar Workflow Hub.
Right.
Which is a fairly bricky thing. It's a fairly big thing in of itself.
Okay.
And it's got a little bit of weight to it. But what I love about it is I can come back from shooting, and I've got stuck in this hub, I've got a SD card reader mm-hmm. and a compact flash card reader.
Yep.
And two 512 gigabyte SSD drives.
Nice.
Connected to my Microsoft Surface Pro, which I'm also taking.
Yep.
I come out, put a card in one, a card in the other, and just transfer both over to both drives at the same time.
Sweet.
So in no time, you've double backed up both cards, boom, 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 and you're done sort of thing. You've got backup, redundancies, and what I always do on every time I travel, I always get my hero shots of the day and protect them on the card as well.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So I'll erase the card once I've transferred them over the two drives, so they're good to go for the next day, but I'll image protect my four or five or six best shots from each day.
Right.
That way, at the end of the trip, if it all goes pear-shaped, and all I've got left is this one memory card, it's got my hero images from every single day.
Yeah, nice.
I've always got, I've got something, you know what I mean? So it's just another redundancy. And if I can find internet somewhere, those same six images will be uploaded to the cloud. Possibly a few more if I'd had a good day.
Yeah.
As I said, my Microsoft Surface Pro.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my gear list for the trip.
That's pretty reasonable.
I thought it was. Yeah, I thought it's cutting back on a few things. So now I'm adding this 150 to 600 possibly. It's a bit of a pain.
Yeah.
But it's not too bad. And the tripod is small too, which is good. So.
Is the reason for taking two bodies just so that you're not having to change lenses out in the field?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you're street shooting and you've got microseconds to decide and shoot before it's over, you don't want to be open up your camera bag and swapping lenses.
Fair enough.
Yeah, one shoulder, 15 to 30, other shoulder, 70 to 200. Do you jump in someone's face with a whitey? Or do you see something a distance and blow up and shoot it? You know, and it's pretty much it. And the majority of the time, realistically, I use my 15 to 30 80% of the time.
Yeah, right.
And my 70 to 100 10% of the time.
And just out of interest, when you've got one camera in your hand and the other one just slung over your shoulder, do you leave them switched on all day?
Yeah. So actually, what's not on that list, and like you mentioned, is I've got four batteries for the cameras.
Right. So two batteries for each
camera. Two each per day, yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
And so I actually don't walk with one in my hand at all. I don't ever have a camera in my hand when I'm walking. They both just sort of dangle loose
right
on my arse straps. So I'm not having to think about dropping a camera to pick up a camera. I just go bang, and it's just instinctive.
Yeah, right.
So once the shot's over, I drop the camera pretty much and hope it stays attached to the strap, because I've dropped it a few times and it's fell off the strap and smashed.
Now, not that I would want to wish you ill on your trips, but do you ever concern yourself with the snatch and grab element?
Well, it's pretty hard because the cameras, the R-straps, the way they're mounted around your body, they're through your arms and around your neck.
Right.
So you can't really just pull it off easily because it's wrapped around your body.
It's pretty much got to take you with it.
Yeah. And they're right on your hips. So they're not sort of sitting on your chest, so they're quite so obvious.
Yeah.
Because that's one. Other thing is then I've got the backpack on the top, and the backpack goes over the straps of the cameras. So that's another retardant, basically. Right. But also the backpack blocks the view that you've got cameras.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty hard system, and I'm a big guy, you know. I'm 6'3" and 400 pounds or whatever. I've put on weight since we last saw each other.
No, obviously.
But I'm a pretty big guy, yes. And Malcolm, whilst he's not as tall as me, he's far more solid. I've seen smaller calves on cows than what that guy's got, dude. Have you seen that man's calves?
No.
I'm serious, they're on my thighs. I'm deadly serious. That man's calves are like my thighs. Right. I'm not talking about the thigh down here by your knee, but right up the top end. He's a man mounted. He's solid. It's like, yeah, it's like when it comes to running over animals, what you don't want to run over in Australia is a wombat.
Yes.
Because they're low down to the ground, and there's just massive center of gravity and massive weight. That's Malcolm, you know. He's just like a bulldozer.
He's a wombat.
Well, pretty much, yeah. So, between the two of us, not someone you'd really want to pick on too much.
Yeah.
And I said I've had situations. Yeah, where I was in China once, and we've been followed by Secret Service.
Right.
Everywhere we went, we've been followed because my wife grew up partly in Beijing in the Australian Embassy, and was. Some thought that maybe that's why they were following, but they're following these weird. So we get this stalked all over the place by weird people. So you kind of get some of these weird experiences when you're traveling and stuff that happens. Yeah. So what I always do is I pick up my camera, take photos of these people. If you see someone who you think's a bit dodgy, might be looking to rip you off, you take their photo.
Right. Nice.
And then they run away. Not knowing, of course, that if they'd taken the cameras, they'd also take the photos. But now they realise they've had their photo taken, they could be recognised, they tend to run off. It's really kind of bizarre. You know? So never cheat. But once again, stuff happens, you know.
Yeah.
I'd always try and beg my case if to keep the memory cards.
Yep.
Yeah, please happily take the cameras, but please give me this, you know.
Yeah.
Would be and hopefully if you've got your backups and your backups are back at the hotel, you've only lost that day's images.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's hopefully the worst case scenario is you lose one day's opportunities.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
of course that would be the best photos you take for the whole trip.
Yeah.
Would be Murphy's Law to do that, of course. Yeah. Now I've also this week, and so I was putting all my stuff in a pile.
Yeah.
And getting ready for the trip. I've been watching a slew of videos on the DJI Mavic drone.
Yeah,
I got myself some serious gas.
Right.
When I first saw the promo video for the GoPro Karma, it was like, And then our mate Mike Holman down in New Zealand said, you've got to check out the DJI. I said, no. Well, you wouldn't know what you're talking about, dude. This Mavic, this GoPro. Well, there's no comparison. You remember that we talked about, I think it was last week, the guy who did the video, the review, and said the GoPro Karma, the worst drone ever?
Yep.
Well, I watched that guy's video. I've got to say, anyone who didn't watch that video, even if you're not remotely interested in drones, go and watch this guy's video. He's great.
Right.
He's like Borat, the comedian character Borat doing product reviews.
Right.
And...
of course, then that product got recalled.
It did. It got recalled because what was the problem with it again? It was
it just had this random thing where it would occasionally fall out of the sky.
Yeah, which is not an ideal situation. Yeah, you'd have to say
slightly detrimental to the quality of the video footage.
There's been a few issues with the Mavic as well. A couple of people have been spinning out of control, and a couple of people that just wanted to land by. I know one guy lost his in a river.
Right.
But so you, because remember, if you're linking by GPS and stuff like that, you know, you've got to make sure you maintain a signal. Yeah, right. But yeah, so yeah, it's there has been a couple of issues with all, but I guess that's with all drones in the world. Nothing's a perfect system. Yeah. But I watched this amazing video about this return to home. This Mavic thing has this guy sent his drone out, not very far. He put it like 2,000 feet away,
right,
and about 400 feet up in the air,
yep.
And then hit the and he had this little landing pad, little helicopter landing pad he'd put out. And so it took off from there. The thing recognized where it took off from. He flew it out, 1,200 feet or whatever, put it up in the air at 400 feet, hit return to home, and the thing came back within inches of where it took off all by itself.
Nice.
Not pressing a single button, which is quite crazy.
It's pretty amazing.
And the videos out there for this stuff. A, you've got to watch Borat and his videos. And even said, look at all the stuff he does reviews on. Even if you're interested in any of them, the guy's great value to watch. He's so funny. But I watched this one guy comparing the DJI Mavic with the DJI Phantom 4, how they hover when being blown at with a leaf blower.
Oh, okay.
Because why not?
Now, the Phantom 4 would be a good 12, 18 months old now, I'm guessing.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they've been around for a little while.
No, they had the Phantom 3. I don't know the 4. But anyway, but it's the big, heavy drone
right.
versus the little lightweight sucker.
Right.
And the little lightweight sucker did better.
Wow.
Funnily enough, which blew this guy away. But as you do, you go and get a leaf blower and blow a drone. And that's a video. And that's a video. You know, it's like, God, the things people do. So, yeah, it's been my week. I've been researching. You can't get any stock. There's no product to buy anyway.
Of
the DJI Mavic. So you can't even get the damn things anyway. I was loving thinking, I'd love to take one to Myanmar and get some phenomenal stuff. But just not available.
The problem is, the moment you do that, you really curtail your ability to shoot stills.
Well, it depends on what you're doing. I mean, the only time I'd really be doing that sort of stuff is when you're probably doing a landscape or something.
Yeah.
Maybe you're waiting for the sun to set.
Right.
And realistically, if you're standing by your tripod with everything set up, you can fly your drone around whilst you're waiting, just press the button every now and then on the camera.
True.
So to me, I don't think it'd be that too much of a – I wouldn't be doing it when I'm out doing street photography or something, you know.
Because I know when I was, in the planning stages to go off and do the Kidney Car Rally, I toyed with the idea of, do I get a drone and try and teach myself how to fly it. And then I thought, well, no, because you can't be doing both. I was primarily hired to shoot stills, so I thought, stuff it. I'll just stick to what they've asked me to do, and we'll leave it at that. And if I get
in, once again, some stills from that angle would be fantastic. Oh, you know,
definitely, they would have been, but it would have, limited what I was doing with the stills if I was trying to focus on, flying a drone at the same time. So
I mean, it's a lot easier these days because you can sort of program them to do stuff or follow a certain path than it was a few years ago.
That was 2 years ago, So
exactly.
Technology's come a long way in those 2 years.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah. So, anyways, that's been my week.
Yeah.
Bit of fun.
I found a couple of stories.
Did you?
One was from IFL Science. Yeah. And this was something that popped up on my Facebook feed today, and it was the best 2016 supermoon photo we've seen yet took several years of planning. And this is very interesting. This guy was using a sort of like a website called Calc Sky, I think it was called. I'm trying to find it here. Anyway, basically this allowed him to predict where the moon would be and where the path of the International Space Station would be on a given night, some point into the future. And naturally, he was looking for the night of the supermoon. And he found that the trajectory of the ISS was going to pass right in front of the moon, only a couple of miles from where he lived. So he started this, planning months and months out, that he would go to this high school and set up his telescope out on a field. And you need to have a look at the photo that he got. It's pretty awesome.
But that 16-year-old kid we've highlighted a couple of times has done the same thing.
The just guy not up during in Byron the Super Bay?
Oh, that's some little kid.
Yeah.
Some little twerp with talent. Yeah, a TWT.
Yeah.
He's done the same kind of thing. Didn't take him 4 years of planning.
No. Okay.
He's had to wait for the supermoon.
I liked it.
So I poo-poo your...
Fair enough.
So when you compare to my supermoon story, my supermoon photo, since it's speaking about supermoon,
right.
Let me just... I'll just send the link through there. Now, just check that link out there.
Right. Your tortilla on the window.
Tortilla on the window. Yeah. The lazy man's photography. Don't go out and wait for the supermoon. Just stick a tortilla on your window and take a photo of it.
I thought that was very clever when I saw it.
Does look kind of the same. It does. And doesn't require 4 years of planning. And all you do is stick a little space station on the front of it.
That's it.
In 3D. And away you go. But speaking of supermoon, because whilst we're on it, we might as well cover them all in one go.
Yeah.
I put in another one in
mpg.org.
No, ignore that one. Look at the one that says Malcolm. It's another Facebook link for you. So our mate Malcolm Fackhander.
Yeah.
He went out and shot the supermoon.
Yes, I saw this yesterday.
Yeah, so he did a great job. And got a model doing some dance moves and shot her in front of Le Supermoon.
Yep.
Le Moon de Supre.
Gorgeous image.
So he did a good series of those. So definitely worthwhile having a bit of a gander at those people. And
definitely.
A lot of perseverance and effort involved in doing something like that.
Yep. Yeah. Now, the very day after we recorded last week, this one popped up in my Facebook feed, and I absolutely loved it. Official White House photographer Pete Souza reveals his favorite photos of Obama.
Yeah, I love those too.
And there's just some absolute classic images in there.
Yeah.
So that link will be in the show.
Definitely worth looking through.
Definitely.
Yeah, he's such a human. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, we haven't lived through his politics for the last 8 years, so we can't comment on that. But he's such a human.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you watch Jerry Seinfeld's show, Coffee in Cars with Comedians.
Oh, yeah.
He takes Barack Obama around for a drive in one of his cars and chats about it. And the guy's such a human. Yeah. He's fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that series of photos.
It's evidenced just from some of those photos, you know, like I think it was about the fourth or fifth one down. There's a picture of a guy standing on a set of scales and Barack Obama standing behind him with his foot on the scale.
It's
just the last sort of thing you expect of a president, you know, to be clowning around like that.
One that I like is he's walking along and he just fist bumps the cleaner.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's just that humanity. I'm really, really impressed. So anyway, they're really good.
Awesome stuff. So definitely check out that link. Last week we spoke about the video from the Planet Earth 2 series from the BBC with the iguanas and the snakes.
That's right.
Do you remember that little video that kind of went viral last week? Right. Well, the BBC has now released a video on a behind the scenes. And unfortunately, I only found this a couple of minutes before we started recording, so I haven't had a chance to watch it. It's only about 4 minutes, but I thought it'd certainly be worth having a look at.
A great follow-up.
Definitely.
To give you even some sort of inkling into how some of this amazing footage is shot.
Yeah. Definitely worth having a look at, and I'll be having a look at that after we finish recording.
Of course.
And the last one that I found, I've got some more from the listeners, but the last one that I found, I thought this was a bit, kind of sad, but kind of fun. This guy suspected his wife of cheating, couldn't follow her at ground level, so he sent his drone up in the air and watched as she rendezvoused with her lover. And the commentary on the video is classic.
Oh, really?
You've got to watch the video to get his commentary.
Oh, no. Well, that's the whole thing. That's a whole new world, isn't it, with these drones?
That's it.
I said this DJI Mavic has a range of 7 kilometers.
What?
Yeah, so you could sit there in your lounge room and follow your wife to work.
So what kind of flight time does it have?
27 minutes.
Wow.
So it's 27 minutes.
But that means it's got to do 14 kilometres in that 27 minutes. Because if you're sending it 7 k's out, you then got to go.
So it's coming back.
Oh, okay, right. It's a one-way ticket, baby.
A one-way ticket to hell. Yeah, so it could go theoretically 7 kilometers in that time. It's got a top speed of 65 kilometers, mind you.
Wow.
Wow. Which is pretty fast.
Yeah.
Has beaten peak hour traffic on the way in the mornings.
And
so
here's the thing. Okay.
Yeah.
As best as I understand, and I won't profess to be an expert in the field, but as best as I understand, in order to get a real-time view of what the camera is seeing from your drones, you need a Wi-Fi connection back to... No?
No, Wi-Fi is long dead.
Oh, so how do they work now?
Some other way.
Thank you for that technical explanation.
You can still receive HD footage from 7 kilometers away.
Seriously?
Depending on the line of sight. I mean, if you're behind buildings and stuff, it'll probably break it up a little bit.
For sure.
You know, it uses some other technology. I can't remember what it's called, lightning or something. But it absolutely no problem at all.
Wow.
Wi-Fi. You can still do Wi-Fi. So you could use your phone if you wanted to, rather than the controller to run it. Your phone's only good for like 300 meters or something with Wi-Fi.
Right.
Wow. But this other technology allows you to go. So up to 7 kilometers, full live feed the whole way on your iPhone.
That's insane.
And you can set up like a little waypoint, so you can plot out a map, a route beforehand.
Oh, really?
I want you to go here, 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 and here. Yeah, and it'll just go off and do it automatically.
What?
Yeah,
that's crazy talk.
Let's see. So it's the just for admiring technology, this thing is worthwhile and a look at. Yeah.
And what are they worth?
It's
ballpark.
$999 US.
Wow, so that's pretty reasonable.
It's pretty reasonable. Yeah, incredible.
For what you're getting.
And that includes the camera, 4K video camera.
Wow.
With gimbal and everything else. I mean, I saw this one footage of this thing's rocking around like crazy in the wind, and the video footage is stable as anything.
Yeah, right.
So it works incredible. I'm just trying to look on here on the stuff to tell me what kind of signal it uses to go that far.
Yeah, right.
I can't find it.
That's right. We'll find a link and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Now, Carl sent us a link to petapixel.com and their story of the Nikon D5600. He said, "Hi, Glenn and Bruce. Interesting specs here. Touch-enabled articulated screen and the ability to share HD videos to your smartphone," which I thought was pretty cool. For those who are into the short video stuff, like not so much Vine because Vine's been killed off, but I think Instagram does short videos, doesn't it? And for those that want to post short videos to Twitter, means that, you know, if you wanted to shoot nice quality video, better than you'll get out of your smartphone, you could shoot short video clips on this camera and then Wi-Fi them straight to your phone and then upload to your social networks straight from your phone. And the other thing
that interesting is that camera's not being available in America.
Well, not yet.
No, it's not going to be available in America.
Oh, really? Okay. And the other thing that I thought was nice was that it mentioned in the story that you can take the location data from your phone, which presumably is with you, and add that metadata to your images.
That's handy.
Yes, yeah, very handy. So although the camera itself may not be GPS enabled, you've got that ability to take that information from the GPS of your phone and add it to your images on the fly.
Which is probably a good way of doing it because the GPS in cameras really drain the batteries incredibly fast.
Do they?
Oh, absolutely. So my Canon 6D, one of the reasons I bought it was to have GPS.
Right.
So when I'm traveling, I can tag sort of, you know, I can keep track of where I'm shooting.
Yeah, right.
But it drains batteries down so much. What I tend to do is every new location, I'll turn on the GPS, do one or two test shots.
Just so
it links in and locks in as a reference, and then I'll turn it off again just to save battery power.
Wow. Interesting.
But having it in your phone, which is used to it and handles that drain probably a little bit better.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea. And if your phone dies, you can still keep taking photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Just watch the thing about, before we go, OcuSync.
Right. And what is it?
Oh, I don't know. OcuSync.
Right.
Occupancy transmission technology is the way it can contact each other.
Interesting. All right. Hey. And Adam sent us a couple of stories. The first one of which was watch an SLR camera get sliced in half by a 60,000 pound per square inch water jet.
That was one of mine. It's awesome.
It is amazing.
Isn't it incredible? It doesn't take much effort either. It's like done.
Yeah, it's like butter.
And
right through it.
It's not like bits fall off and fly out everywhere. It's just stays perfectly intact.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was expecting. I was thinking, oh, when it goes through the glass is just going to splinter and fragment and, you know, go in all directions. But no, it's just like a circuit board or butter. Hey?
Yeah. I thought a circuit board might splinter or something. But no.
That's perfect. Phenomenal.
It's great fun.
And what was amazing was that he still had it switched on when he did it.
Yeah, and you see the light flashing halfway through it being chopped in half?
Yeah.
Good fun stuff.
Anyway.
I used to love watching the Will It Blend show.
Oh, yes.
On YouTube. This is now Will It Chop.
Yeah, exactly. And the other one that Adam sent us was about another piece of software for photo editing, manipulation and whatever, called Affinity Photo, which has been available on the Mac platform.
Is that to Affinity and beyond?
That's the one. Been on the Mac for a while. And they've just released a public beta for the Windows environment. You can pick it up for free now. But even if you...
And then pay for it when it's...
Yeah, but even when it comes out, it's only going to be $50.
$50.
Which will cover all the...
Did we talk about this last week?
Affinity? I didn't think we did, but...
We talked about one like this last week, didn't we? And then you said you'd have a look into it.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was last week.
Who knows? It's been a week.
Because I looked at the date at when Adam had posted it to the Facebook wall, which was the 11th, which would have been...
Yeah, Thursday. But he might have seen it later.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't...
Because I remember reading about this last week. I remember seeing it last week.
Yeah, I thought he posted it to the Facebook wall only about 2 hours after we'd recorded or something. All right, so that's me, Dan. What have you got on your list?
Me? Nothing, that's it. Thanks for coming. Enjoy your weekend. No, got a couple of bits. One of them was the camera being chopped in half by water.
Fantastic.
Google's put out some stuff this week, a few things.
Oh, okay.
They've done a thing called their version of scanning old photos with your phone.
Right.
So it's called Photo Scan. And basically, it's you put out an old photo on the table, and you take an initial photograph, then the camera directs you where to move around the image to take more images. So you're reducing all the glare that may have, reflections that may be on the photograph.
Yep.
And so you move around, do two or three reference shots, bang, then you've got this perfect resolution shot of your old photograph.
Are you saying that the artificial intelligence maps the three or four images together?
No, it's one image. But So it's basically like HDR. It sort of gets the best bits of each one, I'd imagine.
Yeah, right.
And shoves it together.
Wow.
But it sort of guides you to it and everything else. It still sounds like a painfully slow process, but if anyone do one or two photos, it could be kind of good.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's really old archival footage from your family that's, you know, of some sentimental value, it's probably worth going through the time and effort to do that.
I would have thought maybe a flatbed scanner still probably would be like an easier, if you're doing a bunch, an easier solution than each one having to do half a dozen photos of.
The thing is, I was in Western Australia in January, and I was going
Here's where it works.
Hey?
Here's where it works.
Where?
There. In Western Australia, in every January. No. You say you went and visited someone you knew?
My grandmother.
And they had an old photograph?
And she had all these old photographs that I'd never seen.
And her flatbed scanner wasn't working?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Granny's flatty wasn't working?
She was woefully devoid of computers.
So this is, if you go there and you've got the opportunity to shoot half a dozen or some images out in the field that you wouldn't normally have access to. But if you're doing it at home, I still think a scanner would probably be an easier solution. But yeah, absolutely, for that kind of thing, I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
And you know how Google love a clever name.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they've come out with, I love what they call this thing. It's called Photo Scan.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm nuts, eh?
Cutting edge.
Novelty. So they've also come out with some upsizing software this week,
right?
Using machine learning for better ups and smarter upsampling. It's called Upraiser,
right?
That's not called Razor. It's just called Razor. Yeah.
Which is actually an acronym for Rapid and Accurate Image Super Resolution.
Exactly.
Nice.
So that's interesting. If you've got a couple of photographs that are just a bit on the old low red side and you kind of want to boost them up a little bit, theoretically this stuff is going to be a solution to getting them more better.
Yeah, I'm looking at the sample image of the horse's head statue.
You don't look at the samples, too. It's never a good idea to look at the reality.
Well, last week we were talking about somebody's product and they didn't even have any sample images. at least this week they've got sample images. The thing about the upsampled version is it looks like an image that's been shot at really high resolution and then had severe noise reduction applied to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of got that little bit
that look to blocky it, but it's not, look to it. But it does have, yeah, but it's not. But it is. But it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you need it.
But here's the thing, though. The database-based system they're going to use is an intelligent data. It's going to get it gets better the more it does.
Oh, okay.
So it gets better at the job. The more sample images it gets to work on, the more reference images it gets to work on. So you don't imagine with Google's.
And when it's done 10,000 images, it'll be an expert.
Exactly. I love it. Love it. So and then they've done a massive update as well to their Photos app.
Oh, okay.
Especially for Android, and I think they're trying to incorporate a bit more of the Snapseed sort of stuff into it. A lot more filters, a lot more stuff. So if you've been looking for a nice new way of playing on your phone or on your computer with Photos without going into too much depth, like a Photoshop.
Yep.
The Photos app, and it seemed to have improved an awful lot.
Nice.
And then I came across this rather interesting National Portrait Gallery Prize, the Taylor Wessing Photographic Portrait Prize from England for the National Portrait Gallery.
Right.
And looking at who won, the image they chose as the winner for their prize, and it's £15,000 prize. So it's a decent prize.
Okay.
Right. And then comparing it to the Australian Institute of Professional Photography Awards Portrait Prize winner that we talked about earlier in the year, which was really just a composite. There wasn't even a portrait in the portrait.
No.
And if you click on the link, have you seen the first prize?
Yeah. Look, at least it is a portrait.
It's a portrait.
But it doesn't blow me away.
Well, it shouldn't because it's crap.
Yeah.
But it's a normal portrait. I mean, it's a kid's school uniform. It doesn't look that much different from the majority of school photos that you'd have for your kids. His tie's hanging out the outside of his jacket, which is probably where the rebelliousness comes in. I don't know. But it's a nice enough picture, but there's no real art to the image.
No, it's very pedestrian.
However, it's a portrait, which I was just shocked at just how basic and simple this portrait is. Versus what the AIPP had to come out with as a portrait.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a massive difference between the two. So I thought, well, there we are. There's a tab up there for past winners. I'd like to go back and see who the other winners over the past have been and what kind of style they've picked in the past.
Yeah, right.
Because that's just an incredibly, incredibly basic image. And I said, and being a £15,000 prize.
Yep.
That's a fair decent prize, you know? Well, not a bad prize at all.
2015, 2013, 2012, 2011 are all portraits. I'm not sure what 2014 is. It looks like a bunch of people playing with a dog.
It does look like a bunch of people playing with a dog.
Most of their past years, they are actually portraits. And the 2000,
they are portraits.
The 2009 one I like.
There's portraits that are a little bit more art to them. The 2009, which has got a line going straight through her head, dude. It's got the wall going straight through her head.
So what?
It's distracting.
It's not distracting.
The problem is, here's the thing. Okay, let's talk about that photograph right there. Where's the brightest part of the image?
Okay, you're going to say the high part of the wall on the left side.
The high part of the wall. So you've got a line going straight from your subject, straight up out of your subject's head, straight to the brightest part of the image. If it's not bad enough, then your eye will be pulled there already. You've got a line pointing to it. Don't look at my head. Look at that thing up there. You might as well put an arrow on that line.
I disagree, but anyway.
A millimetre. Just edging yourself over a couple of centimetres to the left would have brought into that space.
Yes, but that would have changed the angle of the light hitting the subject. relative to the placement of the camera. No, a
couple of centimetres, dude.
No.
I'm talking 3 centimetres.
No. You couldn't have got that wall out of the shot without significantly changing
it. I'm not talking about getting the wall out of the shot.
Well, what are you trying to do?
I'm talking about moving the line of the wall from the middle of her head
to somewhere
away from the middle of her head.
Right.
All you'd have to move is 3 centimetres to your left.
Yeah.
Nothing else in the scene needs to change but that. And all of a sudden that line is going down somewhere dark towards her hand, and that area where it would touch her body would be a darker spot because it's darker further down.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be as obvious, and it wouldn't be a line coming straight at the smack bang middle of her head. Because it almost follows a line from her nose. You follow her nose up, then there's a highlight on the swimming helmet, which leads you straight to that line to go straight up. And that, once again, 15,000. I might enter this next year. I'm liking how they vote. That's what I'm saying.
The interesting thing about their portraits is they're all quite naturally lit. Like there's no really,
except for that one we're just talking about, which is a flash shot.
Which one? The 2009.
Yeah.
How do you know that it's flash?
Well, look at the direction of the light, dude.
There's no proof there that's from a flash. That could be a door.
Completely flash. No. How do you know? Completely flash. Because there's no other light. The way the light falls, the look of the light, the feel of the light, the colour of the light. Okay. Everything. That's a softbox, dude.
Okay.
It's nothing but.
Okay.
Look at the rest of the room. Look at the room. 1 foot from her to the left of her foot, the floor is dark.
Yeah.
Okay. If it was, and look at the angle of the shadow on her nose. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's coming. The light source is coming from slightly behind her and above.
Yeah.
Okay. If there was a window throwing that much light onto her body there, it would be lighting the floor a hell of a lot more than that.
Right.
It's a flash.
Fair enough.
So, no, so that, nothing wrong with that. Good on him. I would have used flash in that situation too because it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
But what I like about it is that the majority of them are actual proper portraits.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know? Nice. Of varying skill. I'm not sure. Yeah. 2011's an interesting looking winner.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, art's subjective.
Yep.
That's just, yeah, not quite... sure what this is, but just having a quick look at 2008, that threw me for a second there, but it's okay. So have a look at those, but that's just goes to show you, you can't tell. Yeah, you put in a photograph into the, you put any of those into the AIBB, they wouldn't even get like a silver.
No.
They wouldn't even get close to, but the ones they do award, you go, well, why is that getting that?
Yeah.
That winning a portrait prize.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's not a great photo. Doesn't mean it's not a great skill or great artwork. It's just not a portrait.
Yeah.
Anyway, what can I say? So that's everything bar one last thing.
Yeah.
Which is no lens, no problem.
Okay.
Because Hitachi are trying to develop a camera without a lens.
Say what?
Hitachi's lensless camera they're working on. They reckon it'll be out in 2018.
Okay.
So it uses...
Moiré and math.
It uses love and math.
Why love?
That's amore.
All right, okay.
All right. So that or a big eel, one of the two. Japanese companies announced development of a lensless camera that uses moiré fringing and math instead of a lens to capture images. What's more, those images can be focused after you take the shot.
Oy, oy, oy.
Hey, so it's getting all that Lytro and...
take my freaking money now.
Yeah. Imagine not having to carry all those lenses around.
Yeah.
Yeah, mind you, I don't know about angles of view. It'd be interesting.
Yeah.
But lenses. But apparently, there's a few of these things trying to be developed around the place. But it's kind of interesting to see where this will lead us.
Definitely.
What it will do. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, that was it. That's all I had to talk about.
Nice. Do you know I read a sci-fi trilogy. A few years ago.
Trilogy. Then they call it a trilogy.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, that one. By a guy, a Canadian author by the name of Robert Sawyer. Do you remember the show Flash Forward?
No.
Right. I think it was pretty sure it was called Flash Forward. It was about, doesn't matter what it was about. Anyway, he wrote this trilogy.
Trilogy.
Yeah. And it was all about a wormhole that opened up in Canada, of course, because he's a Canadian author, and the being that came through this wormhole from an alternate timeline of planet Earth was
a worm.
Was a Neanderthal, And in the Neanderthal world, the Neanderthals had become the dominant species and Homo sapiens had died out. Right? And so they had developed technology like we have, but their world was completely different to ours. And there are so many times you hear about, you know, it's sci-fi that quite often dictates the way technology develops.
Yeah, and there
were so many things in this book, or in this series of books, that I thought so many of those things are either here or they're coming. You know, like there was the in the Neanderthal.
When was the trilogy written? 1998, 2015?
I'm not sure. It was called the Neanderthal Trilogy. Hominid Trilogy.
It doesn't mean it was written back in those days.
It's interesting, I'm sure it was written before a lot of this stuff.
Because if it was written in 2015 and he's invented cell phones, he's not really pushing the envelope, is what I'm saying.
No, but, you know, one of the things that existed in this hominid, in the Neanderthal world, was there were these cameras that basically floated around the place and they filmed every single thing that every person did. All of the time. So there was no crime.
So it's called a selfie stick.
Yeah, but these things were automated and they recorded 24/7 everything that happened. Basically, there was no crime because you could never have an alibi. Or you couldn't have a fake alibi, put it that way.
Never knew where you were.
And the more I see some of the technology that's coming, the more I think we're going to end up in that scenario pretty soon.
The thing is, there's always worries that the government would be spying on us all the time, but it's ourselves. We can't stop taking photos of ourselves doing stuff. We're incriminating ourselves everywhere.
That's right.
All right. I'll talk to you in a month. Just in time for the Christmas special.
Yes. So you're back on the 15th?
Back on the 15th.
But you won't be ready to record that week? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course I will. Yeah. Otherwise, it's Christmas.
Okay.
We should be able to slip that in there.
All right. Sweet.
But, I think my wife's away, and I think I get back and she goes away. She goes away on Sunday.
I think that's a Wednesday you get back. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So she goes away. I go away before she comes back. I come back and she goes away.
Oh, no, it's a Thursday.
I'm the back Wednesday. I must be back the 14th.
Oh, okay.
So we'll record the 15th.
You reckon you'll be good to go?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Excellent. Well, mate, you have a great time.
We will have a ball.
How many people you got going?
We've got 72.
Seriously?
Of course not.
I was going to say.
That was seven.
Right. Oh, seven and two.
Yeah. Right. So you put them too close to each other, I got confused.
Nice.
No, we're going to have a ball. We're going to take some phenomenal photos, and I'm excited.
And are you going to have internet while you're there?
Sometimes. In some areas.
Excellent.
So wherever possible, I'll be loading some stuff up. So if you're doing podcasts, feel free to take the piss out of my photos and stuff. So look what he's uploaded. Can you believe he's uploaded that?
Excellent. All right, mate. Well, we will talk to you mid-December.
All right. Bye, everyone.
See ya. All right. Well, I guess the last thing to do would be to go to David Marlin's book review. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. When does photography really be effective? When does it work? When does it actually convey something? When is it interesting? These are the sorts of questions that people have been puzzling about, talking about since the beginning of photography. Val Williams has had a go with a book called When Photography Really Works. It's an unusually arranged and compact little book, and it actually packs quite a lot in. Val's premise is that photography really works when we know and remember it, when it yields detail and information about who and how we are, when it gives us space to reflect and imagine and to construct our own narratives. Val has taken a very wide selection of photographs and ordered them into 10 themes, and within each theme there's between 5 and 11 photographs. The themes are single words: work, story, beauty, relationships, everyday, home, conflict, unexpected, movement, and outside. These are color-coded. That becomes important later. So within each of those, there are things like, for example, in story, there's tension, framing, countenance, enactment, proximity, intimacy and memory. So there is one photograph for each of those. So you open a double page spread. The photos on the left, and on the right, there's a table with a series of cells. There's an enlarged small part of the main photo drawing attention to a key part. Next to that, there's a description or critique of the photo itself. Another box contains a short piece that provides a wider context for the photograph. There's also a box with a short quote from the photographer themselves. At the bottom, there's an information box which describes the type of photo and who owns it. You know, for example, platinum print, San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. Then a final box refers you to three other photographs in a similar vein. They're not in this book, but for you to explore in the future. So, for example, Paul Strand's Wall Street. It's under Work Cityscape. And the three photos it refers to onwards are The City by Villa van Dijk, Sao Paulo by René Bury, and Workers Leaving at the End of the Day in Michigan by Bob Alderman. So it's a dipping book. It's a real little gem, this one. It's got lots of interesting things. It packs into a very small space. The back of the book's got a timeline when the photos were taken, as well as a short, very comprehensive bio of each photographer. And again, these are color-coded, just as the timeline is, so you can relate to different parts of the book if you want to. The photographs themselves, some of them you will have seen before, some of them you won't. Particularly of the more famous people, some of them are a little unknown. When Photography Really Works by Val Williams, it's published by Murdoch Books. Booko.com tells us there's two versions. There's a paperback version and a spiral-bound version. The spiral-bound version is between about $14 and $27.50. It looks like it's a little hard to get at the moment, but the paperback version is between $18.65 and $36. Look, it's a real good little stocking filler, a good dipping book, and something to think about. Cheers.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
Another audio2.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShuttersIncPodcast.com.